Hello, and welcome to another podcast from La Civiltà Cattolica English Edition.
It doesn't take us very long in our human journey to discover something very simple. Most people aren't like us. And of course, that also happens when it comes to our basic beliefs and convictions about what's important and what's valuable. We don't have a lot of consensus about that. And often what we do is we cover over the areas of difference and never really investigate them. Same's true when it comes to religion. We'll be presented with people who have a completely different sense of God, life, the world, religion, and often because we feel overwhelmed by it, we don't want to go into it in any great detail. It's become a major preoccupation for the Catholic Church to work out how we are different and how we carry on with our differences with other human beings. And so we have a whole enterprise called interreligious dialogue, interreligious relations. It's a big thing for the Catholic Church in Asia and in many parts of other parts of the world, but most especially in Asia, because Asia is the home of all the great religions. And the Catholic Church tries to do that. Now we're going to talk to Archbishop Felix, who's head of the committee that is responsible for fostering intelligent, effective, and significant engagement between religions for an organisation called the Federation of Asian Bishops' Conferences. And I spoke to him recently, asked him to tell me how he got involved in the whole thing anyway. Now, Archbishop Felix, how do you do? Very nice to meet you.
You do, yes. I'm all right.
Let's just start with you telling your story about how you got into interreligious dialogue, how you became interested in that, because you come from a very Catholic part of India where I wouldn't think that there was much encouragement or incentive to actually move outside those circumstances.
Yes, actually, where I come from is, as you say, a Catholic part since the times of St. Francis Xavier, that is like 16th century. However, I myself was brought up in a very interreligious kind of place. That is, people of majority of Hindus were around. In fact, I come from a Hindu family myself. You know, not me directly, but my great-grandparents. And I went to school, even though I went to Catholic school, but the majority of number of students there were people of other religions like Hindus and Muslims rather than Catholics. And my education, even the language and the culture, the language I speak, my mother tongue is Marathi, and the culture is pervasive, I would say, Indian, very Indian culture. And so I grew up in this kind of situation of interreligious atmosphere. And from my childhood, I had a very positive way of looking at things because people were really very good. You know, like the Hindus were very good Hindus, I found. Muslims were very good Muslims. There were shops run by Zoroastrians. My father was a farmer, so to buy things that were related to agricultural things, you know, worked out by these Zoroastrians, Parsis we call them here. Then there were also some neo-Buddhists who came as laborers, you know. So this was kind of a very interreligious atmosphere and a good influence of religion. You know, I never felt religion was a barrier. In fact, people, because of their religions, operating from the context of their religion, were extremely kind, good, loving, friendly. And so that gave me kind of encouragement, you know, to get to know more of these religions, especially if they were celebrating festivals. You know, and why are they doing that? Or if there is a funeral, why are they doing in this way that we Catholics do in another way? Or if there was, you know, any special prayer that they were having, So all these things, or let's say a family that I went to drink water from, because my fields were in a place where we were far from home, like 10, 15 minutes home, walking distance. And so when I came to the fields where my father was doing the farm, I was thirsty and I didn't want to go back home. And in those days, we didn't have this custom of carrying water bottles. You know, so I just went to the Hindu home, but they would not want to give me water in their glass or anything, you know. I would have had to take a banana leaf, you know, and make it in such a way that I would turn that into some kind of a thing that would, water would be poured into and I would drink. But I was asking myself, why do they do this? Why can't they give me a glass of water in a glass of steel kind of glass or a simple glass, you know? And then I learned that it is according to their religious custom. So there were many curious things that I came to know. And this is the atmosphere in which I grew. And so my love for interreligious dialogue, I had a very positive kind of way of looking at them. And they had a positive way of looking at me. I had a chance to explain to them why I spent a lot of time in the church on Good Friday, for example. Why I spent a lot of time on Christmas Day in the church compound, you know. So I think that was an occasion for interreligious exchange, you know. And so this is how I grew up here. And even in Bombay, actually the majority are not Catholics. In Bombay, the Catholics are minority. If you go to see in the large chunk of population of people, the Hindus would outnumber anybody, followed by Muslims. And then the Christians. The Christians do have impact, a very strong impact, because of our education structure or our social services. And even the visibility of our going to churches is far more than other people, that they would regularly go to their temples or mosques.
We're talking clearly out of your context, but the people listening to this will be from any number of other contexts which are not anything clearly defined as a religious context, let alone a Catholic context. What do you think is the most important thing to get right at the start of engagement with other religions? What do you think is the first constructive step to take so that the encounter with people who believe any number of things can produce a productive, engaging encounter with us Christians from all over the world?
I would say what I have always done and what I have always talked about now that I am, I worked in the Vatican for a number of years in the Pontifical Council. I was chairperson for bishops' conferences on FABC level as well as on CBCI level in India. And what I say to them is, simplest thing is, begin to relate to people. We are generally kind of taken aback when we see someone different from us. And we are taken to be different from them also by those who look at us. And so I would say break the ice by human gestures. Be friendly. Sometimes there are children, if I'm traveling in a train, and there are families. And so I would kind of, you know, not directly barge into, but somehow or the other, smile, for example. It's the simplest of the things. And that breaks the ice, you know, that breaks the barriers. And immediately people begin to then wonder, for example, they ask you, where are you from? And I think they want to know also what my religion is. But suppose I had a rosary in my hand. I mean, I'm just saying, not to show off, but people get curious to know, why is it like this? You know, we lived in the seminary, for example, where I went, and the surroundings of the seminary was all kinds of people of all religions and of no religion also. And the way we kind of comported ourselves, the way we kind of behaved, as it were, you know, our idiosyncrasies or our way of going about. I was not dressed in any special way. I was like any other teenager or adult. And people became curious if I went to a shopkeeper, break the ice by small gestures of relating to people. And this has made me enter into kind of friendship sometimes. Need not be friendship, but some kind of close acquaintance with a person. And then the religious topic comes and people then begin to talk. And then you begin to kind of, you know, start exchanging. But much is in our relationship. You know, this we are taught by the church, and the church uses interfaith dialogue or interreligious dialogue. But actually, if we go to see the Nostra Aetate, talks about relationship, the church's relationship. You know, so what kind of relationship? If I have relationship, I have relationship with everyone. Why not? I mean, everybody is a human being. That is enough for me to start relating to one another. And so that would be the first thing I would say anywhere in the world, even people are in the United States or in Australia or in Europe, or, you know, where majority of people might be of one religion. In Middle East, we will find Muslims, or in Thailand, we will find Buddhists. But me, I don't have to start with that. You know, I must begin with my common points, you know, like I'm hungry. And if I have a pack of biscuits, I open it and I just serve to, you know, at least I offer, you know, to others. The person might say, no, thank you, today I am fasting, you know, because I am so and so. If it is a Muslim and if it is Ramadan month going on, or if it is a Hindu and if it is a Thursday, you know, so, or I might be in the same situation, like it's a Ash Wednesday or Good Friday. And that's where the religious topic comes up, you know.
Very often what happens in many parts of the world now is you live in a very religious culture. You live in a culture that's got multiple religions, but an increasing number of people in the world don't have any religion at all and are what are now called nones, N-O-N-E. They have no religious aspirations or impulses or instincts. Now that happens, say, you know, I happen to be in Australia now because I got trapped here when COVID-19 started and it became very difficult to get around and get out. Living here, I'm very conscious of the impact of Australian culture on the feelings and sensibility and aspirations of people in Australia. And in fact, what's happening is that religion is dying. Same thing is true in the United States. The same thing is true in many parts of Europe. Religion is seen to be a vestige of a culture that many people just simply want to get rid of and don't want to go back to. So just tell me what you think are the most important things to do in a basically post-religious culture to stimulate engagement around the subject of belief.
Two things. I would say the first thing is, in a religious or non-religious culture or a place like, you know, where there is religion is has no more value, as it were. Okay, I should not be one of them who doesn't care for religion. So, for example, if I am a priest, I may be dressed with a Roman collar. I have lived for many years in France, for example. I lived for many years in the United States of America, and I lived for many years in Italy, in Rome. And I travel widely, you know, widely I travel even today. And not that I would go everywhere in my Roman collar, but you are in a Roman collar. And that itself can give some kind of, you know, people can be sometimes little averse to these kind of things, and they might want to be away from me. But depends how I act. With putting on Roman collar, if I am acting in an isolated manner, aloof kind of, you know, trying to be aloof from the people, but I would rather kind of act very friendly. That's number one, which means my identity is religious in a non-religious kind of atmosphere. That would be the first point. Secondly, even though religion has become the vestige of the past, I still feel that religion is so closely related to culture, and you did make mention of that, I'm not talking of per se religious culture, but the culture imbibed, let's say, by Australians or by Europeans or by Americans, I think, you know, they can't get rid of completely the roots of that culture because they are mixed. And so therefore, that also can be a topic to begin with. And if not anything, the third thing, what I do and what I have been doing is I never impose myself. Sometimes I am in a shirt and pant, you know, not necessarily in a collar or anything. And I try to relate on human level, simple human level. And the values that we have accumulated from religion come out in my dealings with on human level, you know. So these are three examples I would give where there is a chance to break the ice, you know, and go deeper, you know, because people are not that superficial, even though they may not want religion. Sometimes it happens that they begin to express why they don't like religion. And you might even agree with them 100% as to why they don't like religion. Because I also don't like the aspects of religion for the reasons other people reject religion, you know. And so I think that's where it's an invitation for us to move into deeper conversation. And that's where I think the interreligious dialogue can begin.
It's a very different world to the world that I live in. The world that I live in is deeply suspicious of religion and is deeply suspicious of religious people and people coming along dressed in religious garb. It immediately will turn a lot of people off because they see religious garb as emblematic of people who are escapists, who are authoritarians, who are, you know, really, really quite troublesome and problematic. I think it does really depend on where you are. Sometimes in settled cultures and settled communities, the religious emblems can be enriching and supportive. Other times they're just disastrous and alienating. Let's move on. Let's move on and talk about...
May I make a comment?
Sure.
You know, I fully agree with you. That's why my principle in life has been, I never impose myself on anyone, including my religion. Never. You know, I try to be as unharmful as possible for me. You know, let us not be threats to others. If some people don't like religion, I think they may have reasons for that. And it would do no good to us. In fact, we would do disservice even to religion in that matter if I try to kind of bring in the conversation or in any indirect or even indirect way religion. I think that is a disservice to religion itself. You know, I think we have to take from where people are. And if you say people are in this way, I think let us become completely disarmed of ourselves. Let us never impose ourselves a threat to people, you know. And what you say happens here sometimes in India. You know, some of my Hindu friends, they don't like to see Christian priests because they think that this guy is now going to convert me, you know. So I think that's the worst thing that can happen to me. And so therefore, when I begin on their turf, on their kind of level, you know, then I have a chance to enter into something very meaningful.
All right. Now let's just move on to where do you think the growth points into religious dialogue and engagement are? Because, I mean, if you asked, say, 15 or 20 years ago, what was the future of religious engagement, you could very much give a pessimistic account that religion was just marginal and insignificant. But if you look back at the last 20 years, there's no factor has been more significant in shaping events in the world than, in fact, religious ideas and religious movements. I mean, look at the convulsion of the Middle East just blowing up, all jet down to religious groups fighting each other. And that's really not going to do anyone any good. So where do you think the growth points are? Where are things going to get better and grow and take us to a better place?
Yes, I think all people are concerned about the problems they are surrounded with. And so therefore, it would be better for us, instead of straight away talking of religion, because interreligious dialogue is not confined only to strictly speaking direct religious subjects. For us Christians, and many now will agree even in other religions, that peace and war are also concerns of religion for many people. For many people, the way human dignity is trampled upon, left and right, you know, rights of the people not respected, fundamental rights of the people. So why can't we begin there? I think there is a growth point here. You know, often for me, during this pandemic, the connecting point with people of other religions is the fear that the pandemic has caused, the fear of dying and hospital spaces kind of being reduced as it for them. And so these are human points, you know, these are very points of very sensitive matters for many people, you know. So I think if we begin on topics of this type, you know, let us take human problems. And that's where I feel magnificently we come together and then we begin to talk of religions indirectly there. You know, so this is one of the points I would suggest to us, like our Pope Francis, you know, the man of actual life. You know, he doesn't talk of philosophy and, you know, scholastic theology, but the man talks about, you know, do you not have food to eat? Are you immigrant and you have nobody wants you? So, you know, and he starts talking of their rights. He talks talking about, you know, their plights. And this attracts people. He becomes beloved man, you know, to even people who don't usually believe in religion. So I think, you know, Pope is showing us a great way. I think all our popes have done that. But I think Pope Francis has got a special way of doing these things. I was part of when he went to Abu Dhabi, for example. And the way every gesture of his, every word of his, even invisibly he was sitting and listening, but he exuded that kind of human touch, and that I am concerned about your problems, that I am concerned about your dreams that you have. And then he puts his hand to kind of, you know, religion. And so therefore, there is a growth point here, and a very strong growth point. And sometimes we might remain there itself, because the world terribly needs these things today, you know. For example, when I announced if vaccines, you know, there's a shortage of vaccines, and I announced that I will spend money from the church and buy vaccines and give to them whoever is needy, regardless of which religion you belong to, which caste you belong to. And I tell you, it created very good ripples around, you know. People were so touched by that. People called me, you know, the Hindus or the Muslims. And I never spoke anything about religion. I only said to them that we need vaccines. That might be kind of a safer thing for us to receive, to take a vaccine. And vaccines are not available. But I asked the priest in the church, well, let us start the camps in the church. Those who can pay will pay. Those who cannot pay, we will see what to do. And we are doing that. And that is, we are reaching out to so many people, you know. People feel to walk in our church premises, they don't feel anything. They don't belong to Christianity, but they are very comfortable with us because they know that we are touching their core, you know, their heart, as it were.
And their core needs and core interests. Okay, so you want to start this whole thing basically in life, in the issues of life and the way people find their way to life. Can you point to, and we'll just, this can wrap up the conversation, what are the coming events or moments or things that we should pay attention to that will contribute to a richer, deeper interreligious engagement? What's going on at the moment that we need to pay attention to?
I think we need to pay attention to, like St. Francis of Assisi, you know, you preach the gospel, but say any word you have to say only if it is necessary. So I think we better this kind of over-enthusiasm of ours. I think the gospel is best preached when we live it. And I would follow Mother Teresa's way. In a country like India, I'm speaking more in my from my context here. You know, what problems are we facing here is like Mother Teresa lived her own holy life as a good Catholic nun, but she never disturbed anybody. On the contrary, when there was a Hindu, which she was with Hindu, she was almost like a Hindu with that person, you know. She didn't force out of conversation some kind of God or Christ, or she did what had to be done. I think these are simple gestures with which if our churches, if Christians lived the Christianity of Jesus in the gospel and kind of invited, not by explicit invitation, but kind of by hints, invited Hindus to live the best of their Hinduism, the Muslims to live the best of their Islam, and the Buddhists to live their Buddhism. I think, you know, that's where we can hold hands and walk. Again, I want to return to human fraternity that Pope Francis speaks about. And the whole encyclical letter, Fratelli Tutti, I think these are nothing but great timely instruments that are put in our hands, that if we only go, you know, if we form this relationship of brother and sister, not that phony type of thing, but genuinely, without saying you are my brother, without saying you are my sister, if I behave that way, I think I have much to hope for. And, you know, the other person also begins to relate to me in that way. And that's interreligious dialogue for me. You know, we don't have to give lectures to each other. We don't have to preach to each other. But I think, you know, we are over-enthusiastic and over-preoccupied by, oh, I'm a Christian and I need to kind of, you know, spread the gospel. Yes, I believe in that. I do believe in that. My life is for that. But I think today, in today's situation, the strongest possible way of really living the gospel is by being that gospel myself. And therefore, like the Beatitudes, which Jesus' eight words that he pronounced, you know, they are like enough for us to just follow them. And I think that is where we can make inroads for deeper conversations, deeper solidarity among ourselves, deeper kind of tying our relationships, being together. I think that is what the world is hungry for, and that is what world needs. In other words, sometimes, you know, let us be human to begin with, because that is also become very scarce today, to find humanity sometimes, you know, in the world which is so materialistic. And I think that's where we can kind of put oil into the lamp that is being extinguished, the lamp of religions, you know, that religions don't need to burn with strong headlights that come into our onto our eyes, you know. But I think they could be little lamps that we lit, you know. That is what religions are supposed to be. And I think if we move in that way, you know, the less we talk, which sounds also very artificial and phony, you know, when we talk of religion, when the subject is not really religion. Like if I go to a family of Hindus and there is a death in the family, and I have gone to console them, and I start talking about, you know, what Jesus said about death and this and that, I think rather if I ask them, who is the family, who will now continue in the family to as a breadwinner, since the father of the family is dead, how many children there are, you know, I think this is a good way of beginning a conversation, rather than kind of, you know, me be heavily dressed in my own paraphernalia and go there and impose myself.
Thank you, Felix, for the way in which you've led us along and taken us into how we can grow and enrich the great conversation of humanity, drawing on our own values, our own beliefs, our own spirituality, and our own relationship with God. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Michael.
Subscriptions to the English edition of La Civiltà Cattolica range in price from $14.95 to $200. For short-term and annual subscriptions, for individuals and for groups. For further information, go to lacivoltacattolica.com, subscribe, lacivilta.com/subscribe.